Welcome to the podcast, Let the Prophet Speak. Today we continue our study of Iyov, Perek Dalid. We are up to Pasuk Zion, that is the book of Job, chapter 4. We are about to read verse 7. We began the response of Eliphaz to Job, Iyov's suffering, and Eliphaz began by saying, "You, Iyov, you were the strong one that helped other people get through their crises. But now that the crisis strikes you, you have no more strength to get through it." Zichor na. Here Iyov makes a powerful statement that makes us really think. Zichor na. Think now. Think for me now. Mihu naki avad. Where is there ever a case when someone who is innocent suffers and gets lost and gets destroyed? Where is it that it happens that people that are upright and straight, remember, God called Iyov a yashar, a person who was straight, nikhadu, can be destroyed? In other words, Eliphaz is saying to Iyov, there's no such thing as an innocent person who suffers. It doesn't exist. Now, I remind you that this is contradicted directly by God himself in the first two chapters of this book. This exceedingly simplistic understanding of how God runs the world and how the world runs, period. The idea that the innocent don't suffer comes from an understanding of the world that everything, when if someone says, yeah, God is just, right? You know, it reminds me, of course, of all so many times we see suffering in this world and an exceedingly irresponsible preacher gets up and says to his or her congregation, and it often gets parroted through the news, it's this and this terrible tragedy happened because of the sin of fill in the blank, whatever their favorite sin is. Now, it comes from the simplistic understanding that suffering is for a reason. And if someone is rewarded, if someone's living well, it must be for a reason. And it comes also from a simplistic reading of many parts of the Torah, which seems to suggest, you know, the people of the time of the flood were sinful and God flooded the world and destroyed them. The Egyptians were evil overlords and they ended up getting drowned in the Red Sea and so on and so forth. A very, you know, so here is and this is what led him to being critical of Iyov in the first place. This simplistic understanding of the world. When I see, right, or as I have seen in my life, those who plow iniquity, in other words, those who embed and push evil through the world, right, and those that plant pain or amal is painful things people do to others, yitzuru, right. They end up, they reap the rewards, so to speak, the opposite of rewards from their actions. People that are bad, and the same thing, people that are bad, you know, often we do see, sometimes we do see them suffering. Someone who's evil eventually gets called out and he or she may get thrown in jail. Or, you know, minishmas Elohai yovedu, right? Where do they get destroyed from? They get destroyed with just a simple breath from God. And from the breath, the wind coming from his nostrils, they are destroyed and they are ceased to exist. Shagas arye v'kol shochal. Here he uses poetically numerous words that are used in Hebrew for lions. Aryeh is the most classic word for a lion, but there's many other words that we find, lavi, kefir, we'll see all these terms, and we'll also see some that don't show up very much. They probably refer to lions, like different stages of their lives, so, you know, you'll have, you know, a female lion versus a male lion versus a young lion, and sometimes you'll have a male lion who's in charge of a pride, or you'll have a male lion who's wandering on his own. So they probably may have referred to other big cats, too, that lived in the area at the time. So it's hard to translate them all properly because we don't really know which type of lion each word that means lion refers to. But in a poetic way, he switches back and forth between different types of lions. So let's read that. Sha'agas aryeh v'kol shochal. The roar of the lion and the sound that is made by the of the shochal, which is probably means a young lion. V'shinei chifirim nitoh. Right? So the lion might scream and roar and they might sound loud and powerful. But the teeth of the kfirim, which probably means young male lions, right, are broken. In other words, they lose their power. Laish oved mi blitarf. In other words, even these powerful images in front of God, they're nothing. A laish, it's another word for a lion, will be destroyed because he has no food to eat. Uvnei lavi yisparadu. And the young lavi, probably cubs, yisparadu, they'll be scattered away. You know, they won't have the support of their parents. So in other words, the evil perishes. Evil will suffer. That's just the way it is. And that's what I've seen everywhere, says Eliphaz. Just think to yourself, does this correspond with what we know to be true? Think about the perpetrators of terrible evils in history. Yes, some Nazis might have gotten some level of justice. But the overwhelming majority, the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who were responsible for perpetrating the evil of the Holocaust, did they ever suffer for what they did? No, at least not that we saw. But Eliphaz decided that he sees it. And in a simple, like I said, a simple reading of the Torah could lead one to believe that as well. Because we see God meting out justice, so that must be the way it is. And if that's the case, what's the next logical conclusion? Let's see where Eliphaz takes it. Then what's the next logical conclusion over the case of Eov? Remember, Eliphaz wasn't there when God bragged about how perfect and how straight and how wonderful Eov is. Eliphaz doesn't know that. Eliphaz just knows his friend, right? And he thought, you know, he was a good guy. Now he sees him suffering. So Eliphaz then goes to use a little bit of a trick, right? And he says, and he goes into this like a little bit of a spiritual trance, right? I know things that other people don't know. Everyone walked around, right? And said, Eov is such a wonderful guy. He's an honest judge. He's honest. He's generous. He's good. He's faithful, so on and so forth. But I have this vision. I know there's something sneaky going on here with you, Eov. The Eli Davor Yigunov, right? Something came, a secret, something that is Yigunov, which really means something that is stolen, meaning something that I shouldn't necessarily have known, but it came to me. Vatikach ozni shemetz menhu, right? My ear took a little bit of notice of this idea, of this something. Where did I find this out? From all the thoughts that float through one's mind when one is dreaming at night. When people are falling into a deep slumber and their mind is full of all these thoughts and ideas, a secret thought was revealed to me. When I heard this thought, I had this terrible fear that came upon me. It's almost like Eliphaz is trying, he doesn't want to come right out and say it. So he's pretending, you know, that he has this vision, this idea, and it was such an awful idea because I could never possibly think bad things about my good friend Eov. So I was shaking, and my bones were shaking with fear, and the idea was so fearful to me. But this ruach, this wind, this spirit, which remember, Eliphaz just referred to the God will destroy you with just his spirit, with just his breath. That breath flew right in front of me. Tisamer sa'aras bisori, and it made my hairs stand up like little spikes on my skin. Ya'amod, and that spirit just stood right in front of me. Velo akir mareu, and I did not understand what it meant. The hint here, I'm positing, is the hint, the idea that Mareu, its appearance, is the I did not, because it's the thought that Eov might be guilty. He might not be such a great guy. Maybe he deserves. Maybe you, Yehov, deserve it. But Eliphaz doesn't want to come out and say it. So he says, V'lo akir mareo. I didn't recognize that spirit that stopped in front of me because I knew Yehov to be a good guy, but now I'm seeing him maybe not so good. L'neged enoy. It stood right. T'muna l'neged enoy. That appearance that appeared right in front of me. D'mamava kol eshma. But nonetheless, I heard this quiet voice, and he's deliberately using the term, the kol demama, the quiet voice, the spirit of God. He's using language which would be so familiar to those of the story of Eliyahu, of Elijah the prophet, when he was on the mountaintop, and God came to him in a kol demama daka, in a soft, quiet voice. He's deliberately using the language to bring up that image as if it was God himself revealing the secret that he could never have known on his own. And what's the secret? Ha'enosh me'elohai yitzdok. Can a human being ever be acquitted, be made just, in other words, be acquitted by God? In other words, is a human being ever really innocent? I looked at Eov and I thought he was a great guy, but can he really be so innocent? Im me'osehu yitargover. Can any man ever be purified by his maker? In other words, can God, who knows and sees everything, can he look at a person and say that person is innocent? No, because no human being is ever truly innocent. Human beings are guilty. The inference there being that when you see someone suffering and you don't understand, it must be because of a sin that is hidden within them. They must be guilty of something. This is the big secret that was revealed in his so-called dream. And then he says something interesting, Eliphaz. Hein ba'avadov lo ya'amin. God does not, this verse is translated in a whole bunch of ways because of the last word, which I'm going to get to in a minute. I'm going to use my way of understanding this, and I'll explain to you why I choose what I choose. But just let's read the surface Hebrew first. Hein ba'avadov lo ya'aminu v'malachov yosim tohola. Behold, in his servants, God doesn't have trust. And in his messengers or in his angels, because a malach could sometimes mean a messenger, could sometimes mean an angel, depending on the context. Yosim tohola, God places or casts tohola. Now, the word tahala has in it the roots he lamed. It's variously translated as the he lamed of holelut, which means silliness or improperness, right? Or it could also mean behilo nero aleroshi, like the shine of light. And it could also sometimes mean praise, as in Tehila L'David. Now, depending on the form of the word and the context, it could mean different things. The commentaries have wildly tried to interpret this entire verse because it kind of hinges upon how you read this word. I'm going to suggest the following. And I could go through various attempts and what many of the classic commentaries explain. I'm going to take this word Tehila and translated it in the same way that we translate the word tehila, right, which is spelled exactly the same. Tuf hey lamed hey. Now, tehila means praise, okay? Now, Eliphaz in this statement is talking about God, right? And he is saying that God cannot, when he looks at every human being has guilt. So, then this verse would be understood as follows, the way I'm trying to translate it. Hein ba'avadov lo ya'amin. It is true, God cannot trust his own servants. In other words, even those people that appear to us like servants, or even those people that actually are servants of God, God cannot fully, completely have trust that they are perfect, because every human being has a flaw. Even those that are his avadov, even those that are known to be his servants, right, still have flaws. Even Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, right, had a flaw, made a mistake. And Moshe is called Avdi Moshe, my servant. He's deliberately choosing this term, Eved, servant. Uvemalachov yasim tohala. To whom can God only praise? Only an angel. And I'm translating this word malach as an angel here, specifically not as a human. Only an angel can be perfect, right? Only in an angel can he give praise to say, oh, that's perfect. Because only an angel has no choice to do or not do. They don't have free will. An angel has to do whatever God created that angel to do, right? However, we understand what an angel is not relevant for this point. The point that Eliphaz is trying to make when he's speaking is what I said. At least I'm positing this translation of the verse. Af shochnei, so if that's the case, right, that no human being is fully innocent. No human being is fully pure. Even his servants, even the ones that are servants of God, that are almost all good, are still not perfect. And only angels can God praise and say they are perfect. So then we see verse 19, Af shochnei botei chomer, asher be'afor yisodom, yidak'um lifnei osh. Right? So then, how much more are those who live in houses made of earth, and they are made themselves out of dirt, right? Yidak'um lifnei osh, that get crushed like a moth that you step on, like a flying moth. Mi boker lo erev yukatu, right? Such people are from morning until evening, they are broken, you know, suffering through their measly lives. Mi bli meisim lo netzach yovedu. Once they get lost and they pass, nobody cares, nobody even notices them. That's how small people are. That's where we are. So such little people. So if God can't find innocence in any human being, in anyone, then certainly the simple little measly little people like us. Halo niso yitram bam yamusu velo v'chachma. When they're, this is another extremely difficult verse to translate. Halo nisa. And I have a lot of commentaries here I can draw from, but I'm going to choose to translate like this. Nisa from the language linsoa, to travel, or to yitram is language of yeter. Rashi and Metzudot both understand yitram as that which people think of themselves as great, right? Whatever it is that they think, or whatever it is that actually might make them great, like according to Metzudot, their faculty of thought and mind, but that travels away from them. Right? Or it could mean, if it's referring to their haughtiness, right? Whatever they think that makes them great just passes away. Yamusu, they pass on, they die v'lo v'chachma, and not with wisdom. In other words, whatever wisdom they have just goes to the grave with them. So, us little people, according to Eliphaz, this concludes this chapter, but Eliphaz's speech continues with chapter 5, which we'll read together, but I just want to point out before we end this discussion of today, that Eliphaz is here stating all human beings have some guilt, with the therefore understanding then, right, the obvious next step is that you, Yisro, I'm sorry, not Yisro, that word Yisro just threw me off, I apologize, a different biblical figure, but you, Eov, you, Eov, must be suffering from something that you did wrong. Nobody is perfect. There must be some sin in you. Now, try to let that sink in for a minute. Eliphaz said, I thought you were this great, wonderful guy. Now I see you suffering, so you must be guilty. Is this the kind of thing a friend is supposed to tell their good friend when he just went through this awful, awful suffering? He lost his children, he lost his livelihood, he lost his health, he's in such pain. Are you supposed to tell him, you're not as great as I thought you were? But when one starts with a very simplistic understanding of what's just, a simplistic understanding of theodicy, that all evil will be punished by God, and we'll see it, and all good will be rewarded by God, then one concludes, when one sees someone suffering, oh, he must not be so great. Think about what that means to us when we see people suffering. Shouldn't we learn from Eliphaz what not to do? When we see a homeless person lying on the street, do we tell ourselves, must be his fault? It must be her fault. Think about it. Even in a case where their own poor decisions, or maybe the own bad things that they might have done, did have a role to play in why they're suffering? Does it explain completely why they're suffering as much as they are? And if you think that it does, what about a child who's suffering? What about someone who lives through something horrific? Think about a Holocaust victim. Maybe once in their life they did something wrong, but does that justify the kind of suffering that they're going through? Think about that. Because the logic of Eliphaz, the simplistic logic, which unfortunately too many people have, leads one to be that kind of cruel and mean person who can say that to a person like Eov, going through what he's going through right now. It would have been much better had he kept his mouth shut, like he said he couldn't do in the beginning. But unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for us, because we're going to learn so many lessons, as Eliphaz's logic plays its way out deeper and deeper, we're going to see the kind of horrific and terrible rabbit hole of awfulness that Eliphaz's ideas, his simplistic ideas of justice, are going to go through. And of course, we're going to hear Eov's response, where he's going to take him to task. But I'm getting ahead of myself. This completes chapter 4. Thank you so much for studying chapter 4 with me. Looking forward to studying chapter 5 and, of course, the rest of this incredibly powerful book together. Have a wonderful day.